You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. For more than a decade, the Bulletproof founder Dave Asprey has shared his unique point of view and expertise to help fans become the best versions of themselves. From living longer to getting smarter, maximizing performance to practicing mindfulness, Dave's followers look to him for his take on the most effective techniques to become healthier and more powerful than most doctors think is possible. Asprey's been fasting for years, long before it gained widespread popularity, and if you're a fan of Bulletproof Coffee and the Bulletproof Diet, you've been enjoying some of the benefits of intermittent fasting too. Now in his latest book, Fast This Way, How to Lose Weight, Get Smarter, and Live Your Longest, Healthiest Life with the Bulletproof Guide to Fasting, Dave asks readers to forget everything they think they know about this ancient practice and takes them on a journey through cutting-edge science to examine the ways they can upend their relationship with food and upgrade their fasting game beyond calorie restriction. And today, Dave returns to the podcast to discuss why diets and New Year's resolutions never work, the difference between fasting and dieting, and why science is just starting to take intermittent fasting seriously. He shares how fasting can reduce inflammation, increase your sharpness and productivity, boost your immune system, and even add years to your life. Dave reveals how 4 days alone in a cave opened his eyes to the benefits of this practice, why every major world religion still has some form of ritualistic fasting, and how he's come to embrace something called a dopamine fast. Plus, some of the misconceptions about dieting and aging, why you always want to start your day with a cup of coffee, and why you finally have permission to never eat kale again. Coming up with biohacking pioneer Dave Asprey. Dave Asprey is a Silicon Valley tech entrepreneur, professional biohacker, the creator of Bulletproof Coffee, and the host of Bulletproof Radio, the Webby Award-winning podcast, as well as the New York Times best-selling author of Game Changers, Headstrong, and the Bulletproof Diet. Now he's out with a new book titled Fast This Way, How to Lose Weight, Get Smarter, and Live Your Longest, Healthiest Life with the Bulletproof Guide to Fasting. Dave, welcome back to the podcast.
I'm always happy to be back on. Thank you.
Yeah, great to have you back. This book kind of comes around just at the right time, I figure. I don't think it's a coincidence that your book came out in January when a lot of us are trying to start a New Year's resolution. And I have to say, I would imagine that half of the resolutions we make probably have something to do with weight loss. And I'd further bet that half of those folks have already fallen off the wagon 2 weeks in now. Why is it that New Year's resolutions, especially ones involving some kind of diet, never seem to take?
The reason they don't take is that diets don't work. Now, wait, okay. Am I the New York Times bestselling author of a diet book? Yeah.
yeah, strange.
When I weighed 300 pounds, though, I lost 100 pounds, but I didn't really lose 100 pounds. I lost closer to 200 or 300 pounds because you lose 20, gain 30, lose 30, gain 40, lose 40, gain 50.
Sure.
And the only thing that I could find was, all right, what is something that you can do most of the time that will work without pain? and without tasting bad. Because if you rely on yourself to be hungry all the time, to eat stuff like kale that tastes like crap and doesn't work anyway, what's going to happen is you'll fall off the wagon. You're destined to, because you're wired that way inside of your cells, and they will win over your willpower because they also make the energy for your willpower. So I wrote Fast This Way because it's entirely possible to eat whatever it is you eat today, change the schedule of when you eat it, and improve your health, have less inflammation, have a brain that works better. And if you do it the way that I'm teaching in the book, you actually aren't hungry and you have more energy in the morning, not less. So you're like, I spent less money, less time, and less energy making breakfast, and I got more energy back than I did before, and I could still eat whatever it is I was going to eat during the time that I ate. It's that big of a difference in wow. how you feel. And I've maintained that 100-pound weight loss without being hungry, without having to restrain myself and look at things, go, I wish I could have that. I just don't even think about food anymore. And you really? Can do that with intermittent fasting. You just have to know how.
I can't tell you how happy I am to hear that I'm not the only one in the anti-kale camp. What are your reasons for avoiding kale, aside from the obvious, which is taste or lack thereof?
Well, I've been talking about this forever. In fact, I went on Joe Rogan's show when he was on the kale smoothie kick. I'm like, Joe, you got to not do this. Here's why. And apparently that made Joe mad. But anyway, 6 years later, he went on and said, I had to quit eating kale because of the reason I told him about. It's called oxalic acid. And it turns out there's five categories of things plants make that cause us to get hungry and inflamed. So if you're trying to say, I'm going to skip breakfast, I'm going to intermittent fast today, and you eat something that triggers hunger, you're going to fail. Kale is one of the things that makes you hungry because oxalic acid sticks to calcium in your blood and makes microcrystals throughout your body that contribute to, kidney stones, joint pain, and gout.
Wow.
So people are saying, well, I ate this and now I felt like crap and I was hungry. Like, have you ever been full after eating a kale salad? No one has, unless no it's full way. Of bacon. It was the bacon that made you full. Throw away the kale and just eat the bacon.
Okay. See, I occasionally get gout and I always thought it was all the meat and cheese and booze that I drink and all that.
Booze,
you're saying
yes.
It might be the kale, huh?
There's two kinds of gout. You can get gout from uric acid, and they're the biggest contributor is actually alcohol and fructose, followed by excessive protein. So most people are like, well, they're picking on the protein, but they're drinking Cokes and going, this won't affect me, but it's the high fructose corn syrup that's the major trigger. And the other kind comes from eating raw spinach and kale and things like that. So you get those out of your diet, you don't have any more food cravings. And so understanding what are the foods that cause you to be hungry, well, if you get rid of those, you always are better off. And then skipping breakfast or even skipping breakfast and lunch, it's just not a big deal. And there's some other hacks you can use. But when you do that, food stops distracting you. Because then 15% of the average thoughts in a person's brain are about what's for their next meal. And if you're not thinking about food at all, instead of focusing on tacos, you could focus on your job or on your spouse or on your mission and helping other people, whatever you like to do with your time. But getting that energy and that focus back, that's why fasting matters.
I'm interested in fasting as a productivity hack because I'll tell you, I can recall when I was doing, the old lemonade diet. I felt sharper and more focused, even though it was somewhat questionable. But more than anything, I felt like I accomplished more on the days when I wasn't eating. And I don't think I realized until then just how much time we spend thinking about our next meal, preparing and cooking food, figuring out which restaurant to go to, where to order from. It actually sucks up a lot of time, doesn't it?
Huge amount of time it sucks up. And the problem is that I worked in Silicon Valley when I was so heavy. And the thought of skipping breakfast was abhorrent. I'm like, are you kidding? If you don't eat six times a day, you go into starvation mode and then you get fatter. That's a lie. And then, but I believed it. So I was afraid of getting fatter. Who wants to be in starvation mode? But worst of all, I would get hypoglycemic. And it's like 11 o'clock. I'm like, okay, I'm going to punch someone. I don't care what they did. I'm just going to punch them. Like I was a jerk. And so I learned to be afraid of being hungry because I knew I'd act like a jerk. I knew I'd have brain fog and I knew that it would make me fat. None of which was actually, well, some of that actually was true, but the afraid of being fat wasn't true. And what I realized over the course of developing the Bulletproof Diet, keep in mind, people have lost 1 million pounds on the Bulletproof Diet.
Wow.
It's been around for 10 years. I've been intermittent fasting with people who are my followers for that amount of time. I have huge amounts of experience with it. And the number one highest return on investment thing you can do is learn how to skip breakfast without being hungry. And if you just do that one thing, you're not likely to get diabetes nearly as much, which reduces your risk of cancer and heart disease and all these other things. But those always happen sometime else later in life. What really matters is that the first time you do it, or maybe the second time, if you don't do it right the first time, you actually got more energy. So you spent less money, you spent less time, you thought less about food, you got more energy. It's a return on investment from a negative investment. It's really cool.
Now, Dave, you say in here that your experience with fasting goes all the way back more than a decade ago to a vision quest that you did in a cave in Arizona. Why was that such an epiphany for you?
Well, I learned, as I mentioned, I was afraid of being hungry for a variety of reasons. And having been obese, you know, you always have issues about not wanting to be obese again. So you're kind of afraid of that. But I also realized I was afraid of being alone. And I'd done some personal development work. You know, why do we date the people we shouldn't date? Why do we get in bad relationships? And this wasn't something that was a rational fear, because fear isn't rational. It's an emotion. So I thought about this. All right, I'm going to hire a shaman and I'm going to ask her to drop me in a cave in the middle of nowhere with no one around for 10 miles. So there's no food and no people. And if I completely lose my marbles, I'm just going to pound on some cave walls. Like, I'm just going to have to sit with it because I didn't give myself a choice. Wow. And I tell this story in the book. And it's, I think this is my best book, most readable book ever because of the story in there. But I remember I had a protein bar, and this is in 2008. Protein bars sucked back then.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, well, I got the best tasting one and I'm just going to have it in my backpack just in case. And like, right as I was walking out the door to go down the trail, I'm like, I'm not going to do that. And I put it back on our kitchen table. And I know very well I would not have fasted for 4 days if that had been in the bag. It would have just had the loudest voice ever. Wow. And we're all facing that right now in an office, but we put donuts in there. And kids come in, cookies. And you're saying, I'm going to fast. The picture in our mind is deprivation and willpower. But if you flip the switch for hunger hormones, which you can do easily, you literally look at that cookie or whatever it is, and there's just no desire in you to eat it. And it's a very freeing feeling to say, oh, I'm going to eat later when I'm actually hungry. Because right now, I truly don't have the urge. So instead of having this one-sided argument, you know, eat the cookie, no. And oh, I'll just eat half the cookie. And then why am I such a bad person? I guess I'll just eat the other half. By the way, there's your New Year's resolution answer right there.
Right.
Like, this is willpower. Exactly. This is biology.
Yeah.
And man, getting control of that voice, it comes from, what do you do during your intermittent fast and what do you do before it?
Okay, I'm listening. So break this down for me.
So what if, let me walk you through this. If you tell someone you're going to go 16 or 18 hours without food, it's like, oh my God, mind blown. Have dinner around 6. Don't eat after dinner. Now you go to bed, let's say at 10. You've already got 4 hours. You sleep for 8 hours. That was 12 hours. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's 12 hours if you wake up at 6 a.m. And if you can just wait till 10 to eat breakfast, you just did a 14-hour fast. And if you can wait till noon, you did 16 hours without food, but you really are like, I just skipped breakfast and waited a little while. I've got this, because it only feels like you're going for 4 or 5 hours. Like, you can do this. And then during that time when you might get hungry, there's 3 fasting hacks in Fast This Way. And one of them has never been written about in the world of fasting. And all of them are backed by good science. And the first one is, if you have a cup of black coffee at the beginning of your fast, not at night, obviously, but in the morning, what happens is it doubles the amount of ketone production in your body. In other words, your body burns fat better. And when you have these little fat burning molecules in your bloodstream, you're less hungry. And there's good clinical data for that. And coffee in and of itself is known to suppress hunger. So all of a sudden you stop thinking about food a little bit. You're saying, but I'm still thinking about food. So then you make it a bulletproof coffee, a little bit of grass-fed butter and some MCT oil. The C8 kind works much better. That specific C8 MCT oil quadruples ketone production in the body compared to street grade, the most common MCT oil or coconut oil. So now all of a sudden, if you're in a cave 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago fasting, you would have had to wait 2.5 days to get that many ketones. And that's why after a couple of days, oh, I can now become enlightened and my brain is working and I'm in all these states. Well, my assumption is that we all have work to do. So when you're doing a working fast, put the MCT oil in there. It will not break your fast.
Okay.
Because there's no protein and there's no carbohydrate. Your insulin is constant and your protein digestion systems are still working on cleaning up your body the way you want them to. And what's going on there is fascinating because now you've got the energy of that guru in a cave after 2 days of fasting, the way I got on my third day, as I write in the book, like, wow, I have all this energy all of a sudden. Well, during the week, you don't want to be hangry for 2 days to get there because that's not going to be a good couple of days. So you do this in the morning. And magically, you still got the metabolic benefits of fasting, but you got the energetic benefits of just showing up the way you wanted to. And the final fasting hack is something called prebiotic fiber. And this is something your body can't digest, but it increases human lifespan. Most of us don't get enough of it, and it radically reduces hunger. So you can put that there in your coffee with or without the bulletproof stuff. And if you do that in the morning, your body still thinks you're fasting, and there is no one on earth who's been able to do a bulletproof coffee with prebiotic fiber and then look around and say, I'm hungry. In fact, if you were to just look at that versus a big kale omelet, the kale omelet's going to make you hungry for the muffin at 10 and the coffee is going to make you ignore the muffin at 10. So you stack these things during a fast for a while and eventually your body is like, oh, I got this. And you can just go all day without eating. Like, oh, I'm fine. I just didn't need to.
Interesting.
And that's so liberating. As a former fat guy, I still have stretch marks. Like, I just don't have to worry anymore. And that's why I wanted to write the book. It's the best ROI you can get. You don't have to change your diet, but if you do, it'll work better.
Yeah, and I'm fascinated by your experience in this cave. You actually say that when you emerged from it, you had gone through something of a spiritual revelation. You describe it almost in religious terms. And I want to talk about that spiritual element of fasting because
I love it.
Virtually every major religion has some kind of ritualistic fasting. Muslims fast for Ramadan, Jews fast for Yom Kippur, Christians give up things for Lent, or Catholics don't eat meat on Fridays. Where does all this come from? Why is there such a connection between fasting and spirituality?
Every spiritual lineage has figured this out in their own way, and they incorporate it as best they can. And here's the way it works. And I'm saying this both from reading literature, but I run an advanced neuroscience institute where we take people for 5 days and put them in very advanced altered states using computers to show how it's working. So I can measure the effects of food and different types of food and see what works. And what these people figured out in history was, you know what? Some amount of energy is used to digest food. And when you're digesting food, that energy is not available for thinking or feeling or doing anything else. And all food has three things in it. It has calories, which are good. You need them. It's called energy. It has nutrients, which are really good. You need those. It also has anti-nutrients or things that are bad for you. And it's just a question of what are the ratio of all three? Well, these anti-nutrients that are common, especially in plant foods, they suck a lot of energy. So if you're trying to get enlightened or go into a spiritual state and you're taking some percentage of your energy to digest food and the food is giving you some energy back, but it's also giving you some toxins that slow you down, well, it's no wonder you didn't have as much energy. And then when you fast, especially for a couple of days, or you use the tricks I'm talking about, when you go into this keto mode or ketosis, which is a natural thing after 2 days of fasting, or even if you're doing intermittent fasting every other day for 3 days, you'll get a little bit of ketones. These ketones can be used by the neurons in your brain, and they contain more calories. They have more energy than glucose. So now all of a sudden, these sages sitting in a cave somewhere, and they're going, wait a minute, I got extra energy into my brain from ketones. I didn't waste any energy on digestion, and I didn't waste any energy on these other things that hitchhiked in on my food. So now I have enough energy to really go in and to sense the world. At the same time, when you have no food in your body's wired to survive. So it goes, let me open up all of my sensors into the world around me. And let me give you a little extra boost of energy so you can go hunt the mastodon or whatever the heck it is we evolved to do. So at that point, like, man, I'm in flow. I've got so much energy. I can sense things around me I couldn't. And I've got enough energy to look within and do whatever the personal development work I was looking to do, or make whatever spiritual progress is in my religion or my spiritual school. And trying to do personal development work, trying to learn, you know, to not hold a grudge or to not, you know, hate people or whatever is most important to you, more compassion, more forgiveness, all those things. Doing that when you're hungry and tired sucks, and you won't be very successful. So let's make it so you're not tired and not hungry, even though there's no food in your stomach. And then progress happens. So there's a spiritual fast and there's a working fast. Working fast is to save your life and make you feel good and probably buy smaller pants and be in the zone during the day. Spiritual fasts, you do them a little bit longer and you slow down, you rest, you reflect, you journal, and you do breath work.
Yeah, you actually refer to a type of fasting that is strictly spiritual and may or may not actually even involve restricting calories. What kind of spiritual fasts are there?
You know, this is one of the most challenging ones, and I'm leading more than 10,000 people through this for free. The first time ever I'm teaching one of my books for 2 weeks, just send your receipt to fastthisway.com, and I'll actually walk people through this for actually 14 days.
Okay.
Not a 14-day fast, but I'll just teach, you know, a little bit of fasting this day, but okay. I'll walk through the chapters in the book with readers and do live Q&As, no cost. It's literally just a gift, fastthisway.com. But when you get to the spiritual, the end of that, one of the hardest fasts that you could do is in the last chapter in the book, and it's a fast from hate. And I'll challenge you to do an intermittent hate fast. Just do 4 hours. Can you go 4 hours without thinking a bad thought about a person or something else?
Wow.
It is really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, until you've done a substantial amount of the kind of work I've done in Tibet, you know, with lamas in South America and just on my own path, it is almost impossible for someone just starting out to do that because you just realize how often is your brain injecting all this negativity into you? Well, you can teach yourself it's okay to not do that. When you learn to skip breakfast, you're telling your body you won't die if you skip breakfast. And the body goes, oh, I guess I won't die. I can chill. And when you successfully go 4 hours without hating anybody and you survive, the body's like, maybe all those negative thoughts aren't necessary because they're emerging from your body. They're just trying to keep you alive. Like, that guy might be untrustworthy. That person's critical. This isn't real. We might think it's real, but this is our body just going, there might be a threat. Let's take them out. And when you show it they're not a threat, you spend less energy trying to take them out. And that energy goes back into maybe making a better decision about breakfast or maybe into being a better person. But that's why spiritual fasting is so powerful.
That almost sounds more challenging than the actual calorie restriction fast. I've probably had like 3 hateful thoughts since we began the interview. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll return with more when we come back in just a moment. Do you think that part of the reason why there hasn't been that much research into the benefits of fasting, at least until relatively recently, is that the scientific community maybe doesn't take it that seriously? Maybe they viewed fasting as a religious practice or thought it was too hippy-dippy and spiritual to warrant serious investigation.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
100%, Ben. You look at acupuncture for years. Acupuncture doesn't work because it can't work. Okay, that is not science. Okay, that is the antithesis of science. And this is how a lot of research has been done historically. That can't work. We won't ignore it. We just know it fails. But the assumptions behind that are flawed. So starting about 10, 15 years ago, the research really started coming out. And I've interviewed some of the top fasting researchers, academic at universities recently for Bulletproof Radio. And the data just keeps coming out more and more and more saying, it looks like when we eat a meal, our body acts as if we just got an infection. And then it releases all these inflammatory antibodies that go in and help to digest the food. So if you're eating all the time, it's like having a chronic infection. But if you eat sometimes and sometimes you don't eat, the body's like, oh, I got this. I'll just digest it. And then I'll heal from this big bunch of food that's now becoming a part of me. The evidence for cancer and for diabetes and for heart disease is overwhelming in favor of this. But here's the deal. We've had since 1970 great advice. Actually, a lot of it was wrong, but we've had advice on what to do about cancer and all these other things. You know, we shouldn't do this. We shouldn't do that. And all the advice sucks because it's not doable by regular people who have lives. Intermittent fasting, when you do it this way, is easier than what you do now. And you don't have to feel a sense of deprivation. There's just nothing, there's no downside to it. It is so good. But if you overdo it, there's a problem. If you fast all of the time, there's a word for that. It's called starvation. So the deal is, how do you do it for women? How do you do it for men?
Really? Men and women don't fast the same way? What's different?
Women have a different biology than men. I know sometimes it's not politically correct to say that women aren't just miniature men, but look, here's the deal. You've got to honor hormone cycles when you're talking about food, and you've got to honor the way men's bodies work too. So there's slight nuances. I will tell you though, everyone of any age can benefit from intermittent fasting, except young children, they do not need to do it. Teenagers should not do it very often.
Okay.
And if you have an eating disorder, it's probably not the place to start. But when you're done with your eating disorder, you'll do intermittent fasting because it gives you less cravings.
Okay.
And it's not about deprivation. It's not about starving. Mm-hmm. It's just about, if I eat a normal amount of food between this time and this time, I win. And if I spread it out over the day, I don't feel as good and I get fatter and I get more likely to die. So okay. We can all do this as long as you don't suffer in the morning. And I know it's not necessary because I've done it for 10 years without suffering.
Okay. Now let's talk about some of the benefits of fasting beyond, you know, what happens in your body physiologically. I think we covered some of that. What about our brain? What happens to our brain? Why are we sharper when we fast?
One of the biggest reasons we're sharper is a little bit of fasting turns on that brain octane induced or MCT oil induced ketosis. And ketones are well known in studies to feed neurons in the brain better than glucose. So if you do that some of the time, you'll do well. And I'm kind of disturbed because my book, The Bulletproof Diet, really helped keto and intermittent fasting enter the mainstream where they are now. But they've been dirtied along the way. People saying, if you eat another gram of sugar again, you're a bad person. The thing is, we need carbs because there are all these cleanup molecules in our body that use carbs as their fuel source. And if you don't eat carbs sometimes, especially for women, you do not like what happens.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. So we want to be careful. Yeah, your brain works well, but just because it works well doesn't mean you need to do the same thing every day. And the other benefits for cognitive function are just there's more energy available because you're not digesting and because inflammation in the body goes down. When inflammation occurs in the brain, you get brain fog. A lot of people don't know this, but you know, if you walk into a wall, you get a bruise or something, you're much more likely to have slower thoughts, even have brain fog, because the inflammation from the muscle in your arm actually travels around in the body. It's called an inflammatory cytokine, and it enters the brain. When you practice intermittent fasting, your overall systemic inflammation goes down, which means the cytokines go down, which means your brain's less inflamed, which means you can think faster. And as a guy who had a lot of inflammation when I weighed 300 pounds, the difference in awareness that comes from this practice and from having a metabolism that does a great job of turning air and food into electrons, it's really hard to state how young and strong and just energetic you feel. And I know people in their 70s who do this religiously because, like, oh my God, I don't have Alzheimer's disease symptoms when I do this. I don't feel like I'm losing it. I don't put my car keys in the fridge, right? And then you see people who are 20 who are doing it. Like, I couldn't study because my brain was all over the place, but I skipped breakfast and now I can focus. Like, I mean, it is such a big thing. And what's the cost? The cost is less than breakfast. Like, it's less than an Egg McMuffin.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It makes me think of my grandparents who recently passed in their mid-90s and were mobile and sharp pretty close to the very end.
Oh, beautiful.
But I mean, they wouldn't eat very much. They would go to Burger King or like Subway, you know, for lunch, and then they would save half of their sandwich and eat it for dinner. So they didn't take in very many calories. And I've always heard that that is one of the key aspects to longevity. In fact, that's one thing that scientists seem to actually agree on is that, for instance, if you cut back your calories 30%, there is a direct connection that says that you will probably live 30% longer. Now, what I don't understand is how does that work? How does it slow aging?
I've been running an anti-aging nonprofit group for about 15 years.
Okay.
One based in Palo Alto. So I've had a lot of experience with the anti-aging crowd, and I'm one of them. I lecture to 3,000 anti-aging doctors at their largest congress every year. There are a few radical people who saw the mouse studies based on caloric restriction who decided to do it. And they walk around cold all the time, super skinny, and going, well, I just got used to the hunger, so I don't really think of it as hunger anymore. Okay. And I feel pretty good, but they're malnourished. I mean, they don't even look healthy. And I would question whether I really want 30% more life like that.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's the other thing is I heard that, yeah, your energy is down, your sex drive is down and all that. So,
but yeah, here's the thing that causes some genetic switches. Guess what else throws most of those genetic switches? Intermittent fasting. So intermittent or time-restricted eating provides many, if not all, of the benefits of caloric restriction.
Okay, interesting.
You might want to take some supplements that also enhance those effects. You might want to take some pharmaceuticals that enhance those effects. I'm going to live to at least 180, so I'm all in on whatever I can do.
That's right.
But intermittent fasting and maybe fasting for 24 or 48 hours every couple of months, which is not a big deal. Not once your body works right. You can just, oh, I guess I'll skip lunch. And oh, I guess I'll also skip dinner. I went to sleep there. I did 36 hours. And you know, all I had to do was skip dinner. It's not that hard. But when you start, you don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. And doing that on a regular basis is going to give you so many of the benefits of starving all the time that you would never starve all the time, because that's just ridiculous.
Okay. So you're saying you're not a big believer in the mouse study and all that. You say instead of restricting calories, just
no humans
restrict
can do
your
it.
Window.
Like there's like eight people who do it and they're all really odd.
True. Well, you know, I also want to talk about fasting in the immune system. You know, I'm one of those guys who I can never remember if it's feed a cold and starve a fever or vice versa. But you know, since we're in the midst of COVID-19 and cold and flu season, what are the benefits and maybe even the drawbacks of fasting, if there are any?
There's a chapter about immunity in Fast This Way, and I present two different papers that are really important in the time of COVID. And frankly, anyone who travels 150 days of the year like I did until they shut everything down and put all the small businesses out of business, I didn't get sick when I traveled. It was very, very rare, but when I first started out, it was. So knowing this stuff is important, no matter whether or not, you know, we've got COVID floating around or whatever else every year. You just don't want to be getting sick. So this is general human knowledge, not just COVID. But I put the chapter in there because it's so powerful. What researchers found is that if you have a bacterial infection, that not eating sugar and not eating carbs helps you survive and helps you fight off the bacteria faster. Yet, if you have a viral infection, they found that having some blood glucose, but not too high, helps you survive a viral infection. In other words, different kinds of infections require different eating patterns. Okay. However, if you practice intermittent fasting 3 times a week, maybe 4 times a week, you're likely to be much more resilient for any kind of infection you get, just because your cells can do a better job of fighting it off. If you don't practice intermittent fasting, and you're over about 35, 40, you're probably on the path to diabetes, unless you have a very careful diet and exercise regimen. And that's, you know, 42% of Americans are overweight. So I feel like having seen just tens of thousands of people share, oh, I just lost 20, 30, 40 pounds on this kind of stuff in the Bulletproof community, man, we don't have to have those levels of obesity. And if a 300-pound computer hacker like me could do this, I was worse off than most people. So I'm like the canary in the coal mine guy, and intermittent fasting works for immunity. But I would tell you, if I had a viral infection, I'm not going to have sugar because that suppresses immunity. But would I have some carbs and white rice or something like that? Heck yeah. Do I have white rice regularly anyway? Yeah. You don't have to be in ketosis all the time. It's not even good for you.
Okay. So you don't want to starve your way out of COVID then. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think so, but you don't want to eat your way out of it either.
Right. Now, speaking more generally, I'm curious, what does the biohack king do to protect himself from COVID-19? And has it involved injecting yourself with bleach? I mean, you're the guy who'll try anything, aren't you?
Bleach? No. It turns out drain cleaner's much better.
No. Of course.
You don't have to do that kind of stuff. Yeah. What I focus on is something called the inner mask. And the inner mask is something you always wear that protects you from viruses and bacteria out there. And keep in mind, 80% of people who get COVID don't know they got it. So you want to be one of those 80%.
Right.
Right. And that's really important. So I focus on immune function, on reducing chronic inflammation, on intermittent fasting. I take my zinc. I make sure that I measure my vitamin D levels so they're adequate. And this is protective for all things out there. It doesn't mean you won't get any virus or any bacteria. It just means you're much less likely to. And if you do, you're likely to not notice, or it'll slow you down. It's called basic human metabolic resilience, and it works for your immune system. Now, as someone who's previously had chronic fatigue syndrome, autoimmune issues, high risk of stroke and heart attack before I was 30, pre-diabetes, I don't exactly have the nicest hand dealt to me when I got started, and I can do this. So when it comes to things like not getting sick, sleeping really well, not eating on airplanes, and those are things that make a huge difference, especially that vitamin D thing like that. Yeah. And
what about the not eating on airplanes? Tell me about that. I don't know about that.
Man, your job is to
combine food. I mean, aside from the food is just terrible.
Well, yeah, you shouldn't eat airplane food just because it's not food. But
right.
Your body takes 30 pounds of air and some amount of food and combines them to make your energy every day. Mm-hmm. There's no air on airplanes. They're pressurized to like 8,000 feet or 6,000 feet, depending on what model you're on. So when you're up there, ketones are protective from ionizing radiation you get when you're much higher up in the air. Huh. So have coffee, have water, and don't eat in the air. And when you do that, magically, you'll feel way, way better when you land. Because when you don't have the air to digest the food, then the food sits around and it creates inflammation and you land and you're a zombie and it takes you a day to recover. And I've gotten to the point using the techniques, there's a chapter on combining light and food timing to change your sleep rhythms. I don't get jet lag anywhere on the planet. I can fly to Dubai and get off the airplane and be highly functional and I'm just okay. This was not my life for most of my life as an entrepreneur, but I've dialed that in the last 5 years where I just don't worry about it. But I also write in the book about how I did fly to Dubai. And the stewardess comes up to me and says, oh, would you like a menu? And I said, no, thanks. I'm not eating on the flight. And she looked at me like I was going to die. And I looked at her. I said, oh, don't worry. It takes a couple months to starve to death. I won't starve in 18 hours. I'll be okay. So she goes away and she sends another stewardess over, like to talk to me because I'm crazy. I'm like, can we just give this to you? And then I said, no, I might just have some coffee later. And she goes, wait a minute. You're Dave Asprey. Yeah. She goes, I have your TrueDark glasses. Oh my God, I'm drinking bulletproof coffee in the galley. Do you want me to get you some? You don't need a menu. How cool is that? Wow. Right. So flight crews are doing bulletproof. They're doing intermittent fasting because it works better for them. And they have the hardest job on earth.
Yeah. Yeah. And they, you know, they don't have time to eat anyways, probably.
Yeah. So, and they're getting like leftover economy class ham sandwiches or something. It's just not food.
Yeah. Now, there are so many different diets out there. There's keto, paleo, vegan, you know, just as many fasts. Some of these are pretty dubious. Do you have a preference or, you know, is it kind of just whatever works for you?
Well, most people don't have the ability to measure what works for them.
Mm-hmm. Right? Interesting.
And if it works for you, you're not hungry between meals. You never want a snack. Your pants fit the way you want them to fit. You're highly resilient. You sleep really well. So a lot of times you say, oh, I'm healthy, but you're not even close. So yes, whatever works for you, but mostly what you think works for you is because you read it in Reader's Digest and you probably believe that low fat diets and exercising all the time were good for you too. They've been proven to be bad for you, yet we all did it for a long time. And this, I'm going to do what's supposed to work. That's why 42% of people are obese. So what I'm a fan of is, funny enough, called the Bulletproof Diet, 500,000 copies sold, 1,000,000 pounds lost. But what it is, it includes intermittent fasting, but not all the time. It includes keto, but not all the time. And you avoid these five classes of foods that cause inflammation in almost everyone, but it's different foods for different people. I call them suspect foods. You got to know what foods are compatible with your biology. Kale isn't really compatible with anyone, but some people handle it more than others. Kale's gross. All right. But what about something like garbanzo beans or legumes? Mm-hmm. Turns out huge swaths of people really, really don't do well on those, but they eat them because they taste good and they don't know because they eat them all the time.
I thought those were like superfoods. I eat garbanzo beans all the time because I'm told that they're so good for you.
Garbanzo beans are disgusting. Okay. You can have guacamole or you can have garbanzo beans. Okay. Like, who would ever want hummus over guac? Sorry, okay. I just got to say that. But
what about chickpeas?
Chickpeas are garbanzo beans. Same thing.
I know. Why is that? Has anyone figured out why some people call them chickpeas, why some are garbanzo beans?
I think it's a regional. I looked that up. It's like a regional variation sort of things. Like if you're from the South, it's this. Yeah. But here's the thing. We evolved to survive on all kinds of weird food. 99% of plants will kill you. If you go outside and just pick up something from the forest and put it in your mouth, you're probably going to go to the hospital. I mean, they really want to kill you. And then there's some that we can live on enough to get through the famine until we can hunt a deer. Uh-huh. Right? So the idea that we're supposed to live off the I'm starving foods because they're somehow good for us because they have one good nutrient without ignoring these five classes, it's not even good science. The kind of thinking that supports that, like here's a bowl of cyanide with a vitamin capsule on top. They're like, oh, it has vitamins. And then they would take it, right? So you got to look at the pros and the cons of every food. And what the Bulletproof Diet does that's different than paleo and certainly isn't vegan is it helps you figure out which foods are causing that inflammation for you. Let's talk about garbanzo beans. They're high in something called phytic acid or phytates. This is something that blocks your body's ability to absorb zinc and other minerals. So you're like, oh, I don't want to get COVID. I want adequate zinc. Let me eat some garbanzo beans, which are going to stick to your zinc so you can't use it. Well, they tasted good, right? That's one class. There's also something called a lectin. This is something that is in lots of different types of foods. Not all lectins are bad for you. Your body actually uses them. We make some in our body. But certain plant lectins will stick to parts of your body and cause inflammation there based on your genetics. So there are some people who can eat that garbanzo bean. They apparently don't worry about their minerals and they don't get inflamed from it. For everyone else, it shreds your gut. It makes you get joint pain and it sticks to your minerals. So it's just not a good food choice. So if you know it makes you feel that way, if you know it makes you more hungry later, then it's not good for you. But if you actually handle it well, if your ancestors ate it for thousands of years, then okay, it probably works for you. But it's that you've got to dial it in. So there's a group of foods that work for everyone, a group of foods that work for no one, and then a group of foods that might work for you. And once you dial that in, you eat on the schedule I talk about in Fast This Way, it works. And if that was too complex, go to fastthisway.com and you can download the roadmap. It's a one-page thing you print on your fridge that tells you foods you can eat, foods that might be compatible with you, and foods that are kryptonite foods.
Okay.
It's one page. It's free. I don't want your money. I just want everyone to eat foods that don't make them act like jerks.
Okay. Well, you know, before we go, I want to ask you about a fasting trend that I hear a lot about these days that has nothing to do with food. That's the dopamine fast, where you disconnect from technology, social media, et cetera, which makes a world of sense to me because, yeah, I mean, we're like Pavlov's dog every time we get a text. Are you a big believer in the dopamine fast as well?
The dopamine fast was created by Cameron Seppa. I'm actually an investor in his new company.
Oh, really?
And I don't know if he's public about it. It's called Maximus. And I write about dopamine fasting. And it turns out just creating peace in your life and creating calmness will make the body more attuned to interesting things. It's very similar to what happens when you fast from food for a little while. It opens up the sensors in your body so you become more receptive. There's a story in Fast This Way from a guy who did a lot of training in the military for long range patrol. These are the guys who hide in the jungle for a month where no one can find them. And their training was, here's an 80-pound backpack. You have no food. You're going to go to that place 3 days away carrying the weight. See you there. Here's a compass. And then they go away. And I'm like, how could you walk for 3 days with no food and 80 pounds on your back? I don't know. We just did it. He said, but what they did, they put a hamburger or cheeseburger actually in the tree by the destination. And he said, when we were 2 or 3 miles away, we could smell that hamburger. Wow. Our senses were so open. We could feel and see and know things we couldn't know because we were actually attuned. And the same thing happens in a dopamine fast. I'm not going to do social media. I'm not going to have anything that's overstimulating. That's part of the spiritual fasting thing. And when you go on a longer fast, you actually pause, you rest, you reflect. In fact, most spiritual fasts of any length are also dopamine fasts. If you do Vipassana, sometimes it's even in a dark room, but you don't talk to people. There's nothing to do. There's no social media. You just sit there. And that is a dopamine fast combined maybe with regular fasting, combined with meditation. So we've known for thousands of years that giving the body brief periods of no input makes us way more receptive when we do get it. Mm-hmm. And my son, who was maybe 9 at the time, he sees me doing the research and writing the book, sees me fasting. He goes, Daddy, I want to fast. I go, you're not allowed to fast very often because you're young and, you know, your body's growing and it's not the right time for you. And he says, yeah, I just want to see if I can do it. I said, all right. So he says, I'm going to fast for 24 hours. Okay. That's kind of baller, to be honest. That's as a first fast. Wow.
Yeah.
And I said, that's a big commitment. Alan, maybe you should use a fasting hack in the morning just so you won't be cranky. He goes, no. I want to show myself I can do it. I'm not going to use any fasting. I'm just going to have water. I'm like, man, like, I don't know where he got this. Not for me. I'm lazy. And at the end of the fast, which he did do without any encouragement, it was all internal motivation. He ate and he goes, Daddy, you're right. Fasting is the best spice ever. That was the best meal I've ever had in my life. And it was so cute, but that's what a dopamine fast does too, mm-hmm. right? You go without. So then when you do experience things, they matter more. And that's a powerful thing to do. Okay. And I do write about that in the book because it matters.
Wow. That sounds unbelievably peaceful. I think I need one. And I think Trump getting off of Twitter maybe helps a little bit.
But it might help a little bit. Yeah. And I mean, in retrospect, I might have chosen a better day to launch my book than January 19th.
Yeah.
So I get, you know, one day before God knows right. what. But here's the deal.
Yeah.
The more spiritual side of what I do, my practice and the things I share on my blog and all, It's around these three spiritual states. My neuroscience company is called 40 Years of Zen, and we work on using neurofeedback and EEG machines to teach these. The first level is empathy. And, oh, wow, that person fasting, they must be really hungry. I can feel their hunger. Therefore, I'll shove food in their face. Okay, first level, at least you're feeling another person's pain. Second level is compassion. You don't have to take in their pain, but you can see that, oh, yeah, maybe they're hungry. I could offer it to them, right? But the third level is called equanimity, and it's a higher, more evolved state. Equanimity means I can be calm in the middle of a storm. I can meditate in a hurricane. And I've been working on my own equanimity. So no matter what any political douchebag of any flavor does, it doesn't really matter. Because if they weren't doing it, some other political douchebag would be doing it. But what I can do is I can control the things that I can control. And I can be at peace with whatever's going on around me, which lets me take much better action as a father, as an entrepreneur, as an author. And it just creates peace. But to do that, dopamine fasting, spiritual fasting, and just sitting down and having the time and the energy to evaluate really how much control you have over what Trump tweets. You didn't have any ever, so you didn't have to be upset about it.
Good advice. And thank you for giving me permission to ditch kale finally.
Yeah, permission granted.
One more time. The book is called Fast This Way, How to Lose Weight, Get Smarter, and Live Your Longest, Healthiest Life with the Bulletproof Guide to Fasting. Dave Asprey, it was great talking to you again.
Thank you, Ben. Have an awesome day.
Thanks again to Dave Asprey for coming on the show. Order his book, Fast This Way, How to Lose Weight, Get Smarter, and Live Your Longest, Healthiest Life with the Bulletproof Guide to Fasting on Amazon, Audible, or wherever books are sold. And for more information on the Bulletproof Fast, visit fastthisway.com. Listen to his podcast, Bulletproof Radio, wherever you get your podcasts, and keep up with Dave at bulletproof.com and on Twitter at bulletproofexec. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.